Welcome to Thinking Out Loud, the podcast that puts you inside conversations with the most deeply passionate, intensely dedicated, and yes, the most thoughtful people in our industry. So sit back and stay tuned. They may just change the way you think.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a media and entertainment marketing organization. And today I'm speaking with Brett Weitz, General Manager for TNT, TBS, and True TV.
Hello.
Brett, welcome. Thanks so much for joining us today.
An honor to be here. Thank you so much.
So it's interesting in your GM role that you come from a development background.
Yeah.
And so your lens is very content-centric.
Sure, it is.
So tell us a little bit about your vision for the direction of content for TBS, TNT,
and
True TV.
You know, it's interesting. And the role, the fun part of the business for me has been, of this new role, has been the business side of it, and which has been incredibly exciting for me to kind of be in the middle of the money and to be an understanding of like how big these brands are, how much revenue we bring into this company, but also how lucky to be sitting at the perch of a company that really has across the board some of the best content and some of the best platforms in all of media, whether that be the linear businesses, whether it be the new SVOD platform that's going to premiere in 2020, whether it be theatrical with Warner Media, the gold standard that is HBO. It's really exciting to be in the middle of that conversation right now. And as far as a vision, I would say, you know, TNT has built its brand on the back of incredible movies, exhilarating sports, and really beautifully done dramas. And I would say they are kind of broad appeal populist dramas in a lot of ways. That is the vision. I want to continue to do that. I want to continue to give the audience that's already there what they want, and while also giving them things that they may not even necessarily know they want. And I think that's part of being a good developer and hiring the right people to do that job is some of the best shows that we've bought or I've bought in the last 11 years of the networks have been things I didn't even know we needed. And I think for TNT, there's the opportunity to do really beautifully done dramas and continue to cultivate a more of a broad appeal drama base on that side, which is what Claws and Animal Kingdom do incredibly well. TBS has built its back for years and years was built on the back of an acquired network. We are now known for incredible original content. And then part of that original content we've done is just we put joy back into comedy. And I know that sounds silly, but that's been part of the fun evolution of this brand has been really taking comedies that we believe appeal to the Big Bang audience, but also doing things that are really funny. And whether that be something salacious and stupid as Angie Tribeca, which, you know, Steve and Nancy Carell would say is silly and ridiculous, or something as cool and kind of different as Miracle Workers, which is Steve Buscemi and Daniel Radcliffe. Those are on the prism of kind of shows. They live on different worlds, but kind of in the sweet spot of joy and fun, that's what I want to do. And on True TV, I think where the old regime did an incredible job was they built up this big brand in Practical Jokers. I mean, an incredible brand, and Tacoma FD kind of fit right into that sweet spot. Again, I want to go to what the audience base is sitting in these networks and really trying to expand the show and the content around that. For me, it is the excitement of the job is kind of watching these brands build and grow, but also you can't redirect a network midway through. I mean, to rebrand a network and say like, it's an all animation network with, you know, your animation that costs $4, you're like, well, that's going to be kind of impossible. And there's other platforms that do it much better. This is what we do very well. And we want to continue to do that very well. So as a vision, I want to continue to build on the success of what these networks have already built their success on and expand on that as best as possible.
Lots of interesting kernels in there. I'm going to go back to comedy for a minute because I think it was Vice that named you the gatekeeper of comedy at one point.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. You must have been pretty deep into the comedy space, and comedy is really challenging to curate well.
It is.
And you just spoke about this broad spectrum of comedy that TBS covers.
Yeah.
How do you now, in your new role, tap into that gatekeeper of comedy talent and get your team to pay it forward in the right way?
You just said the right thing. It's my team. I think I'm the luckiest guy in the world to do the job I get to do. Here's what we talk about, which is the reality of the world right now. And when you look outside, you see a darkness and an uneasiness. If you can bring people to laugh, if you can give people a respite from their day, if you can give, that is my job. My job is that when people come home from driving 2 hours in a commute, which is what I do, and you sit down on a couch and you connect with your family and you tell everybody about the day, but you have that moment where you engage in content. If that content doesn't speak to you, you have ruin the relationship between you and the consumer. Part of what we want to do is make people laugh. Part of what I think as a developer is knowing what the brand is, but understanding the constraints of that brand. TBS is, for many, many years, has always been, you know, again, this acquired network with comedies that continue to make people laugh. If I then all of a sudden put in original content and felt like it was just dark and depressing, I would have failed that relationship. I think the comedies that we have done are really funny and they have joy in them and they give people that lightness where when you follow social media, people are like, I'm just laughing. Tracy Morgan is at his all-time best. Tiffany Haddish is incredible. Daniel Radcliffe couldn't be more charming. Those are wins for us. So part of what we're doing is reading the environment, reading the landscape of the country, getting a sense of what people want. And again, like it is a relationship between you and the consumer.
And people want a lot of stuff.
People want a lot. Right? There's 1,500 different shows on television. Yeah, it's too much.
But the competitive nature of the business right now is also at an all-time high.
Sure.
The competition for talent.
Oh, yeah.
For writers, right? Just for the engine that drives the content that consumers then enjoy and engage with.
Sure.
Is really challenging.
It is.
So talk to us a little bit about that. What does that look like from your perspective? And what are you doing to navigate this
crazy landscape? It's a great question. I think part of what we have done is provided the creator with an incredible experience. I think what we have done that some of the SVOD partners, that some of the SVOD players haven't done is care about the content. If you are in the business of just throwing things up against the wall and seeing if you can be everything to everybody, that's not a curated experience. That is a curated experience for the masses with no real marketing push behind it and no real PR push behind it. And no one really knows what's going on. There's no voice. Part of what we do for people is when we launch a show, we get behind it 1,000,000%. Whether it's a marketing campaign, be the marketing campaign, whether it be the PR campaign, when we sit in these conversations with these creators who have had their post-SVOD experience, they are blown away by the amount of attention we give to their content, how much we have supported them in their vision, and the execution, ultimately, of the final product to the consumer. That is where we are at our best. That's where we lean in. That's where we are different than everybody else out there. That is the gold standard that is the WarnerMedia business plan. That is what Bob and Kevin do better than anybody. Bob is an incredible showman. Same with Kevin, an incredible developer. These guys have been doing it forever. You cannot just let something dribble out and not really support it. That won't happen. That never has happened. And you know, when we launched Angie Tribeca, what a 25-hour binge-a-thon. 25 hours of the show around the clock with a live telecast, a live telethon. Who does that to launch a show with like live, you know, events coming in and people, you know, executives on stage fielding calls from Florida and Houston, wherever it may be? That is a company that gets behind their product. And I think that is, we have hopefully what distinguishes us is the experience we give our creators in the development process and the support we give them when the show, when it's time to premiere the show.
And are you seeing that working? Are you,
yes.
You're attracting first shot.
Hands down. We are finding ourselves beating Netflix. I'll just say the name Netflix more and more because we care, because the experience is not a just, it's not a binge and burn mentality, if you will. It's ultimately something where we really are. I don't have the luxury of doing 50 different things. I have the luxury of doing a very finite amount of content over the course of a year. That needs to be really taken care of and really, you know, handled properly. Otherwise, you get a reputation of not really caring about the content that people are doing. And then you're 7-Eleven and anyone's coming in and seeing if they can get whatever they want. You know, it's something for everybody. And I think that's a bad brand. So not 7-Eleven. Sullivan's Love a good brand. I love your stuff. Thank you, 7-Eleven. Love
so
Slurpees.
You've referenced brands. You've talked about the Warner Media business model. Enlighten us a little bit about what it's like now to be part of Warner Media.
You were deep into Turner.
You're a Turner guy coming into this new environment.
For sure.
The new environment is still being defined.
Yeah.
It's a new business for them as well.
Here's the great part of it. I love and respect Casey Bloys exponentially and have been a friend of his for a long time through work. Sarah Aubrey and I were partners for the past 5 years in running these two different networks. Kevin Riley's been my boss. Peter Roth, Susan Rovner, Brett Paul, all the people at Warner Brothers have been suppliers to me for my entire career. This is family. And so the idea now of not having a siloed business, but being able to talk in a room to everybody as one network, as one massive brand of company, is something that very few other places can do. There's not many platforms out there. There's not many companies out there that have a robust, high-reaching, and relevant linear business an incredible SVOD platform that's going to have probably the best library based off 100 years of Warner Brothers content in the game. Some of the best theatrical runs and distribution in all of television and all of film. The best studio in television. The gold standard that is HBO, which I said earlier. That's all in the ecosystem. We all now play together. That is an inspiring business model. Having Bob sitting over all of HBO, all of Turner, what was Turner, all the linear networks as part as HBO Max creates an efficiency that is an efficiency of quality control, an efficiency of workflow, an efficiency of content curation. Not many people have that. Not many places can do that. There are a couple, and we all know what they are, but that'll be the fun of the game. That'll be when we start to see like how the next iteration of these SVOD players really start to either pull down, you know, either go away, either get bought out by other people, merge and figure it out. We are not just a pipe business. We are not a data business. We are a content business, and people see through that. Other places really just are in the business for content or data or, you know, tech. That's not who we are.
So how do you begin to decide where the content goes first and how it moves throughout the Warner Media ecosystem, sure. Right? We've all read that there's content that was in development for TurnerNet, yep, that's now really going to be shifted over to the SVOD,
sure,
platform. There's other moves happening around. The streaming service is named HBO Max. Yep. So you have this new brand sitting on top of, yep, the direct-to-consumer, yep, product. What does all of that look like?
It is the excitement of that is ultimately that there's a lot of meetings that Sarah and I are in together. Development meetings or pitch meetings. Our teams are doing a bunch of things together where we will find ourselves premiering something on linear. And then 5 months later, which is the MVPD holdback, premiering it over on the streaming side. Obviously, that'll be part of the experience. Again, part of what we want to try to do is build different access points for the consumer and the creator. You know, they can say to us, across Warner Media, my show has been consumed by 30 million people. An episode, 5 million on linear, 12 million here, some on VOD. That's an amazing data point to know that that is how people are consuming now. The life cycle of content, the life cycle of one piece of television, one piece of film, is not a one and done business. It is through multiple different iterations. And if you continue to think that one and done for some of these SVOD businesses is sustainable, they're ultimately cannibalizing themselves. If you don't have great A-plus content every quarter where it becomes a destination for people to consume, no one's going to want your service. And that's part of this game is like content is always king and will be forever and ever. So ultimately, I think that's where we continue to live. But as far as development is concerned, I apologize, I'll come back to it, is it's really exciting to know that these shows, especially for our people, can live in different iterations. Where Conan O'Brien can be on TBS and late night, but do a stand-up special on the SVOD side, on the, you know, HBO Max side, now you're building a business. Now you're building content, little ecosystems and little businesses that will probably outlast these shows in some iteration. I'm not in the business of putting on a show and just saying like, that's one and done. Got to build little companies around these.
So that sounds very different because that model allows for creating different touch points with consumers.
Yes.
And it also creates opportunities to touch different consumers,
yes,
right? Somebody, yeah, who might watch Conan on this side over here, yeah, would not think about watching him over there in different iterations. Yeah. But going back to your earlier conversation about going deep within TNT and TBS and what audiences expect and the definition around those brands,
yeah,
that's a yin and yang. So what is that balance?
Well, so those audiences are, I would say, distinct to those linear networks, right? So to your point, it is if the, you know, 45 to 52 year old female who is a TNT audience watches the TNT brand and that's where they consume. But that is a slice of this country of 320 million people. Then we have the ability for 40 million other people to go watch something of his on teamcoco.com. And the teamcoco.com numbers are some of the biggest numbers you'll see in all of streaming and social and digital. Then they have an opportunity to go watch something even more curated on the Warner HBO Max, where Conan's doing a stand-up special. That's another audience base, right? So people, different consumer sets watch and consume content in very different ways. If we give them an entry point while owning the entire experience, we win. As opposed to farming out that experience, is what we've done historically for the last 15 years. We've sold our downstream revenue, our downstream rights to some other place where they've controlled that. Now we control the ecosystem and that virtuous circle that we have always been like, God, I wish we could just have like, you know, theatrical and SVOD and linear and brick and mortar and, you know, DirecTV Now and AT&T stores. And you have the ability to kind of play in all these different pods. Each one of those is someone different. you aggregate that number. That becomes the new basis for success. That becomes your new high watermark.
And talk a little bit about the brand equity among all of this, because consumers have come to understand and expect certain things from your respective brands.
Absolutely.
Some of that content now will be migrating or developed for HBO Max, just putting the HBO name into this consumer product sets a certain expectation and framework.
Sure.
But it sounds like the content that will be offered there is going to be way broader than what HBO has just typically been known for.
Because there will still be HBO siloed.
So, you know, some of these opportunities also come with branding challenges.
Yeah.
What does, in your mind, what does that evolution look like in the course of the next year to 2 years as your marketing teams are working on pushing the brands into this new space?
I think, you know, I think HBO Max becomes a bit of a catch-all for all of Warner Media, right? I think ultimately people consume by show first, then by brand in the aggregate. I think people hear about Animal Kingdom. They go, I'd love to watch Animal Kingdom. And they go looking for Animal Kingdom. And it happens to be on TNT. I think that is the way that people kind of consume first, which is through show and through social connection by someone saying, this is how we consume. That is, I believe, what the evolution of consumption will continually be. The linear networks also created an incredible platform for Warner Media as far as purely just a marketing tool, by the way. I mean, if you think about it, and I won't tell you the numbers, but our SVOD partners, our friends across the street, spend an enormous amount of money on our linear networks to get people to watch their SVOD platform. That is the joke of it all. They wish they had what we have, which is the reach and relevance of daytime and, you know, live same day. Here it is. And we also now have the ability to have a plug and play X amount of dollars a month SVOD service that gets you the same consideration set of consumers. That's fantastic for us. As far as brand equity is concerned, I think what it ultimately is in the next 15 years or 10 years, whatever it may be, I think TV is just going to, consumption will change even once again. And I don't know if it becomes more of a genius bar, you know, the playlist model where you just can say like, I'm going to do this and you pay multiple services or one service and it all aggregate into your playlist, if you will. I use quote signs just so we know that. I think that is an iteration of consumption that we're probably going to be seeing in the next 10 or 15 years. Then it really becomes brand equity is I know I can count on these folks to make me great shows. And that is that's the relationship I have with people who watch TNT and TBS. As that starts to dissipate and people's like, I just want to go watch the show, then maybe the brand value dips a little bit. It becomes less relevant potentially. But if it's associated with HBO Max, that's a win for me as an employee of HBO Max or employee of Warner Media. That becomes a win for the home team. Good one for the home team.
All of this shifting viewing behavior is impacting the business in all kinds of interesting ways, many of which you've just discussed. But something we haven't discussed is the small screen, big screen dynamic and the multi-screen universe that people now live in. And so what does that do to the development process? What does that do to the filter that you apply now when you look at a potential show?
I think, listen, if I was a DP, I'd want to blow my brains out. Because I mean, you spend all this time making something look beautiful and someone's watching it on a 3x5 screen. That would be the biggest difference. People want their content when they want it, how they want it, where they want it. Period, end of story. How you develop for that is never... I don't think of like, oh, someone's on the run. I want to make sure that I'm developing or we're developing something that's going to apply to that kind of mindset. There's definitely a little bit of a millennial mindset as far as there is the binge and burn mentality, but there's always like a little bit of like an ADD quality of television at times where it's like, it must be fast. It must be this. And like, we have to consume. I don't think about that as a developer. I know that's just how someone and some people consume television. What I think about is like, let's just give them the best characters. Let's give them cool action. Someone's going to watch Top Gun Maverick on this device. I promise you those folks that were making that movie weren't thinking like, I wonder if we have to do X, Y, and Z. They're just like, let's give them the best thing possible and see where they consume it. End of day.
That's a very interesting take. And I've heard both sides of that.
Yeah.
Because
I don't want to, and maybe I'm underthinking it, but I don't want to, what doesn't keep me up at night is where people take the content, as long as they're taking the content, as long as we are connected to them wherever they are. Now, what keeps me up at night is them leaving the linear ecosystem and just going somewhere else. That freaks me out. That is the reality of our business, I think, at some point.
And so the library of content becomes
key. key. I mean, for our MVPD relationships, that is what they want, which is original content on broad reaching networks that continue to surprise and delight. The reason why TNT, I think, does so well, as I think I've said, is sports, movies, original content. Why TBS does well, incredible acquired stuff, great originals, NCAA Final Four, MLB. You have a lot of assets. Jokers, the Impractical Jokers and great originals. True TV has been sold for years on the backbone of being a 100% original network. Those are why we still are in business with some of these incredible companies like the Dishes and the Comcast. And they want that. They expect that. And we want to continue to deliver for them.
So you talked a little bit about what does keep you up at night, what doesn't keep you up at night. Leave us with something that you're churning through your mind right now that has to do with what's next.
I think for me, what's next is a little bit of what we just said, which is what keeps me up at night is making sure that the audience base on these networks is robust enough that we can continue to deliver great shows to a great audience. And I think, and ultimately, maybe I'm naive when I say this, but I think when Xandr, our ad partners on the AT&T side, make a great product and we have a better product and a better experience for the consumer with advertising built in, that'll be really exciting for us. The advertising model that currently exists, the experience for linear television isn't great, just not. Once we make that better, then I see like there's a potential leveling off in the linear erosion that I'm very excited about because I do still think these are incredibly large brands that make an enormous amount of money for these companies because they have broad reach. If we can fine tune that and make that a better experience, then we win the day and that's really exciting. But it is, you know, for me, as I think about the, you know, what's next is continue to make great content, to continue to have a great job, great time doing it, work with incredible people and let them do their job. That's ultimately what I've always tried to do in my career is, you know, hire really smart people and get out of their way.
One of my favorite quotes is, "I'm an excellent leader. I follow my people wherever they go."
Exactly. So, yes. Yeah. And I do. I do indeed. It is definitely not an autonomy in our offices. It is very much the democracy in our office spaces. You know, I lose a lot of the time, but I listen to really smart people and hopefully execute accordingly. I think I'm just renting this chair at this point.
Well, thank you for renting it with us today. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I know our listeners have had the experience of gaining from your experience.
Thank you.
And terrific.
Pleasure. Thank you so much for having
me. Thank you.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.